On our morning show from WRCO and WRCE, we have special in-studio guests today. State Senator Howard Markline is here. Representative Tony Kurtz as well from the area. Tony representing the 50th Assembly District and Howard the 17th Senate District. And good to have them here. They've been busy. Good to have you here, Howard. You've been all over the place, haven't you?
We have been busy. We've had last week a lot of fairs between Grant County and Juneau County. I was in both of them. Tony was spent a lot of time up in Juneau County last week. We've had just a lot of meetings going on. You know, Economic Development Committee meeting in Grant County this week. Our Farm Bureau annual meetings start this week. I've got three county Farm Bureau annual meetings, which I can't make all three of them, unfortunately, but Towns Association meetings going on. We've been busy. So it's I haven't been home too much, which I guess is okay. So,
Tony,
Peggy doesn't mind that.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Yeah, she get out of here. Yeah,
exactly.
Don't you have somewhere to go?
I know how that goes. And you had Farm Technology Days, Tony, as well?
Oh, yeah. No, there was a lot of great activities. And once again, good morning to everybody. And, just a busy summer. And like you and I were talking, and we were talking before we went on air, just how fast the summer is just flying by. I mean, Howard and I had a wonderful time at the Juneau County Fair, which ended yesterday. And your fair is right around the corner, you know, September 6th. So, it's a busy time of year. And unfortunately, summer's quickly ending.
Yeah, it is. We could take the cooler weather. We're going to get that, it sounds like, somewhere along.
Eventually.
The way. Eventually.
Someday.
Oh, there was certainly some good news. I know you were certainly recently real happy at the Viola EMS 50th anniversary celebration.
Yes, I was up there a couple weeks ago, I guess it was, and to help celebrate Viola's EMS's 50th anniversary. And great opportunity for us to say thank you. And also, it was entertaining to listen to some of the old timers. Two of the original EMS people were there, and they shared some stories of the first runs and that kind of thing that they did. And some of them were, you know, kind of pretty funny, actually, you know. So but it was good, you know. And again, we just great opportunity to say thank you to them. And we, between the state budget that we just passed in June, as well as the shared revenue bill that we passed in June, we made some significant improvements in our rural EMS package. And more money, certainly, for our rural EMS. That the funding assistance program went from $2.2 million annually to $25 million annually. So that's a significant increase, which our rural EMS units certainly need. And made a couple other changes to make the national registry exam, make that optional at the discretion of the local first responders, EMRs. And so some, I think, will probably keep the test, and others will make it optional, which is wonderful. So a couple other things that will affect staffing and that sort of thing for rural EMS. And I think the important thing is that, you know, our rural EMS units are different than Madison. They're different than Milwaukee. And, you know, and we're persuasive enough to get that through the shared revenue bill and the state budget, and which is great news for our local EMS units.
Definitely is, Tony. And in your area too, the EMS units, they can kind of choose what they want to do with that money, can't they?
Absolutely. And like I said, we've broadened some of the usage of that money. Before, it was very narrowed. We broadened that, so it's going to be a lot more fun. Anytime Howard and I go and we talk about this, EMS, fire, police, they're incredibly excited about these opportunities and the increase in funding. And I give, you know, Senator Markline a lot of credit. That national registry test, you know, it's something that we've tried, and particularly he has led on to try to get that to be optional, and he hit the nail on the head. If like Mauston, Howard and I were up there yesterday for the parade. Mauston's ambulance service is going to probably keep the registry test. And once again, they can do that. Mm-hmm. Or as maybe a Casanova, which we've talked to many, many times, they're probably going to make that an optional test. And that's the good thing about that. Based on your needs, based on your area, that's what that, you know, that EMS director, that's what that fire chief, they now can make that decision if they want to do that or not. And like I said, I think it's a win. It doesn't hurt the big departments like the Madison, the Milwaukee. They can still require it like they are, but it's going to definitely help our smaller ones attract and retain people. That's the thing. That test, we've talked about this in the past. You know, it's a pretty cumbersome test. It asks some questions that, to be very honest, I mean, they were at tire pressure or something, like questions that, you know, an EMR doesn't necessarily need to know. But our big concern is anybody out here that, you know, is thinking about getting into the EMRs or EMS, please do so. We are critically short. We need volunteers. You make that program work, and it is a needed program, because what we worry about, which unfortunately has happened up in the northern part, is folks just aren't showing up. They'll call 911, and unfortunately they just don't have the people to show up. And just imagine in our area, if something like that happened, you call 911, you know, and nobody shows up. That I think in this day and age, that's unacceptable. But once again, it's all dependent on those wonderful EMRs, EMTs. That's why we got to be so thankful for what they do. And this, in my humble opinion, is a very small step forward to say, one, thank you, and then to give you more funding to help you.
Indeed. Hopefully that does help in recruiting. It's a daunting thing maybe for somebody that they don't want to take the test and they still want to volunteer their time, Howard.
Absolutely. And for, again, our rural units, The flexibility that we're giving is for the lowest level, the EMRs, okay, not EMTs. And the idea basically is to get people interested at that first step on the ladder, that once they get involved in a unit and start, you know, being a part of that unit, and you may realize that, hey, I want to take the next step to become an EMT. But if they don't become EMRs because of a hurdle that, you know, they can't, you know, fulfill, we never get them ever to even consider becoming an EMT. So, again, it's just it's a matter of flexibility, and keep the decision on that close to the ground. Keep it, you know, in the local community, because as Tony said, you know, every community is different, you know, and the needs are different, you know, in our even in our district. We have paramedics, you know, I've got paramedic services in some areas. That's not going to change, you know. Yeah, that's wonderful, but I've also got an awful lot of small little EMRs, and we need people to respond, you know, because otherwise, you know, just the driving distance. I've talked to, you know, and, you know, and again, in Madison, Milwaukee, I definitely think they can comprehend that it's 35 minutes to, you know, in our area, 40 minutes to drive maybe, and, you know, so a paramedic paid unit, is just that model just isn't going to work out here.
We talked last time we were here, Tony, about County Road O, and we've had some good work on that recently.
Oh, no, and I'm so glad. That's something that Senator Markline and I, you know, very fortunate to get that in the budget. And, you know, I'm excited. I give Josh Elder, you know, the highway commissioner, a lot of credit. He was in Madison several times, politicking, saying, "Hey, this is the need for County O," and I'm glad we got the funding. Obviously, this is road construction season. I mean, if you anywhere you go right now, they're doing a major part on 33 between Reedsburg, going all the way into Waniwak. So, a lot of road construction. This is just one small step to help continue that, because we do. We the last three budgets, really four budgets, we've really invested in our infrastructure as we should, and you're going to continue that. And I'm just really thankful we got this in the budget, get O fixed.
Howard, what about any status, any update on the bridge there at Lone Rock?
So I was over there a couple three weeks ago, I guess, and this is the Highway 130 bridge over the Wisconsin River, and from all accounts, it appears to be going very well. And what's unique about that project is that I believe that is the only project in the state of Wisconsin that we're using design-build process, okay? Typically, for projects. There's a separate design phase, and then we go through the property acquisition and the environmental impact studies and the archaeological impact studies and whatever. And the elapsed time is pretty significant. And when I was over there meeting with the DOT and with the contractors a few weeks ago, I asked the DOT, so if we hadn't used design build, when would this be done, this project be done? And the DOT guy said 2031. Now, Wow. Yeah, it's going to be done next year, end of next year. And so, again, they're able with design build to do multiple things at the same time. There's a lot more flexibility. And in my conversations with the DOT and with the contractor, they've identified a number of cost savings areas, which is wonderful. So those three bridges that are going to be replaced, they don't owe us anything. They've been there for a long, long, long time, longer than any of us in this room, certainly. And so that bridge is needed. And I think when it's done, we're going to be pretty happy with that, especially we have a lot of people that, work here in Richland Center that live across the river or go to work at Land's End, in Dodgeville and stuff. There's a lot of traffic over those bridges. And also the way that intersection, that T intersection in the south side is right now, I mean, it's difficult for semis to make the turns. It's just very, very difficult. That's going to be alleviated as well. So anyway, all in all, that was something that we pushed the last budget. And again, with the design build, and the big benefit of design build is that in a complex construction project, it accelerates the time frame and hopefully improves the return of the taxpayers.
It was interesting. It started this year where they were flooded out. I mean, they had a serious situation, and now we're looking at sandbars in the Wisconsin River.
Yeah, it's dry. It's I cross the Wisconsin River almost on a daily basis, going someplace, and yeah, the river is really low, and it's dry all over. Dry at my place. Gosh, in May on Mother's Day we had 0.4 inches of rain in my place. In July or in June, we had 0.7 inches of rain. July, between 1 and 2 inches. And I mean, things are dry. They still are dry.
Even though a recent rain, yeah, it's still.
Yeah, we had, last week was wonderful. We had 2.1 inches last Monday. So that was wonderful. We could use quite a few of those kinds of rains.
Waniwak area, it seemed like you were getting maybe a little bit more rain over there, or did I imagine that, Tony?
I think you're imagining that. But to Howard's point, I mean, we had 1.5 inches at my place in Waniwak, and it every drop soaked in. But, I know you guys are covering the extreme heat that's going to start, and, that's just going to suck the moisture out and be very stressful on the crops. And it's interesting, our corn right now is in a critical spot, and I know the heat's not good for that pollination. So, like I said, any rain, we'll take every inch we can take.
An update possibly on broadband. Anything new in that regard, Tony?
Well, broadband, I think a lot of people have seen the federal money that's going to come down. I mean, just the federal money alone is going to be like $1.1 billion. And once again, what your listeners have to understand is there's a private match with that as well. So, our estimates, and they're very conservative, but, you take the 1.1, you take the private match, it could be anywhere from $1.7 to $1.8 billion that will be used for broadband. That's why in this particular budget that we just passed and the governor signed, we did not put any state money into broadband because all this federal money is going to be coming down. And I think, to be prudent, let's use the federal money first, since there's going to be a lot of it. And then maybe next budget cycle, we got to look at what areas are we going to fill in that perhaps this federal money didn't do. So there's a lot of money available. The issue now, and it's just funny, I was talking to Lynx Network at the county fair up in Juneau County, because they're building out around Mauston right now with their fiber optics. They think what we did was very prudent because of all this money that's in the pipeline, and I'm sure Howard probably knows the excess money that's still waiting to be allocated, but they're having problems finding crews. They're having problems getting materials, you know, so that is hampering and delaying projects as well. I mean, it's coming. That's the thing. You know, it anybody that gets fiber, it's night and day, and it is coming. There's a lot of money available. It's just a matter of capacity right now.
Have you seen progress where you live, Howard?
I have, and it took a while, certainly. The Reedsburg utility put our fiber in the town of Spring Green. And, you know, what's interesting is that project started, I think, pre-2018 with the design, you know, and all that. There's a lot of engineering stuff that has to be done before applications are submitted. So at my place, we were in phase three of that. So we just got service last month. Through Reedsburg Utility, which is, you know, fiber, and which we're, you know, happy about. It took a long time, but to follow up on Tony's point too, you know, sometimes there's a long lead time between when some of these projects are on the drawing board, when they get funded, and then when the fiber actually goes in the ground. So that was certainly the case with my at our place, and so you know, Tony touched on, you know, the capacity issues, okay, and when it comes to broadband and roads, that's one of the concerns that I always consider in terms of allocating money, because, you know, like with roads, if our contractors are at capacity, they can't get any more done, they don't have the staff, they, you know, If we put more money into the programs, road program, you know, what will happen? Will we get more roads fixed and bridges done, or will the price go up? Obviously, the price goes up. So, and we've got the same thing, you know, with broadband right now. And during the budget process, I had a number of providers that in my district, local providers that said, please, please, no more money. You know, their pipeline is so full of projects, and with the federal money that's coming down the road here, that they didn't want any more, you know, state money at this point in time. So I think what will happen is that once the federal money is deployed, I met with one of the new commissioners on the Public Service Commission last week, and, you know, once I think we're going to see where that federal money goes. Once we know where that goes, I think down the road in the next budget, couple budgets, we'll be able to assess where the holes are. Where are the gaps that this federal money didn't cover? And then I think that would be a perfect opportunity for us, if needed, to backfill some of these holes that the federal money didn't cover.
Broadband planning workshops going on. Do you know much about those?
I think there are some coming up. I guess I don't offhand have any of the details on that. So I know that there's some conversations about just helping people. Like, where do you start? I guess that's often the question is, like, you know, we don't have broadband. We're out in the country. You know, someplace don't have broadband. How do you? Where do we start? So I think I think there are some. The PSC has got some meetings coming up on that.
I know the other thing that that you and Tony both have been seeing when you've been out and about talking to folks is questions about the shared revenue bill. What can you say about that?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's awesome. That was something that I don't want to take away all of Tony's thunder here, but he started this about a year ago, and with Tony Kurtz and Senator Mary Felskowski. Mary represents the northeastern part of the state, and the two of them, I think, got together again last September-ish, started this process, and, you know, we haven't raised shared revenue for a long time. This goes back 20 plus years, I believe, and, you know, the problem wasn't just putting money into the formula. The formula was screwed up. We had different townships and communities getting doing pretty well under their old formula, and others not doing very well at all. And so they undertook the challenge of not just putting more money into it. I mean, actually putting the money into it is probably the easy part of it. It's what should that new formula look like? And then I think it was about in January, Tony, is when the scope of his project increased, because along came some concerns about what's going on in Milwaukee with their pension problem, the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County, and I'll let Tony talk about that. But anyway, so that got folded in, which complicated his efforts on that. And so I guess the important thing with that Milwaukee thing is that not a penny of money from this area is going to go into Milwaukee. It's a sales tax on Milwaukee city and county. If you go to a Brewers game, yep, you're probably going to pay a little bit, a little bit more in sales tax there. But for the rest of us, we're not, it doesn't affect us at all. But I'm just amazed that when I look at the numbers, which I have in front of me here, the increase in the shared revenue to Richland County, almost $800,000 of additional money. City of Richland Center, almost $300,000. But even like our townships, Buena Vista, $60,000 increase. I mean, these are big. Village of Iola, $56,000 more and stuff. So big numbers, and which our communities can certainly use. And it's got to be used for public safety. So fire, EMS, and police, which is wonderful. So,
and Tony, the price of things, as everything has gone up, this is beneficial, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh. Well, just to Howard's point, so just to recap, I mean, I know we've talked about it before in the past, but shared revenue, obviously the state collects sales tax. And, there was a formula years ago that was developed on how the state shares that money back to the municipalities. It could be the county, it could be the city, it could be the townships, like Howard said. And that was frozen in 2004, that number. And actually in 2009, due to a recession, it was cut. And then again in 2012, it was cut once again. So communities have not seen an increase at all. They've actually seen a decrease. And to your point, with the inflationary pressures we've seen, especially over the last 3 years, every community is getting, just like every household, they're getting squeezed by those additional costs. So this is long overdue. It's, to be very fair, it kind of started because of Richland County. This is something last summer. Obviously, the county communicated with Howard and I about some of the financial troubles the county was having. I don't think that's anything new to people. And that's when I reached out to the county's association, Wisconsin County's Association. I said, is there anything we can do? Who's working on this? And that's when they told me that that Senator Fiskalski was working on something. I literally was in Hillsboro. I was carrying pulling a gravity box, and I pulled over and called Mary on the phone, and I said, "Mary, you got anybody in the assembly you're working with?" And she said, "No." And that's kind of how it all started, literally a year ago. And then it just went on from there. And to Howard's point, our goal was basically just to help rural communities. I mean, look at the funding mechanism and try to get more funding to rural communities. And it's interesting, before we did all this, like a township, so Richland County has all these wonderful townships. The townships in the state of Wisconsin, it represents 26% of the population of the state of Wisconsin. But before we changed this, those townships were only getting about 5.6 or 5.8% of the shared revenue dollars. Once again, represents 26% of the population, but was only getting like 5.5, 5.6% of the actual shared revenue dollars. So those were one of our biggest focuses. How do we try to, you're not going to level it, but how do you get more money to rural communities? And so now under this new formula, instead of 5.6, it's almost close to more to 11% of the shared revenue dollars are coming to township. So it's more than doubled. And you can see that from the totals, like Howard was mentioning, like a town of Marshall. Town of Marshall right now gets a little over $40,000 in shared revenue. They're almost going to double and they're going to get an additional $39,000. So that's very similar to all the different townships around our state. They're going to see a big increase. And trust me, our townships are ran very frugally, and I think they're going to probably invest a lot of that money into roads and infrastructure. I mean, it's interesting. We had, like, we, Howard and I, were proud to represent the town of Clearfield up in Juneau County, and they, their town hall has no running water.
They, really?
No, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, there was an article recently, I can't remember, it was Journal Sentinel, about another township up in northern Wisconsin. I think it's in Mary's, Fiskowski, once again. No running water in their town hall. You know, they got a porta potty outside. So when we tell our colleagues on the eastern side of the state, obviously the suburbs around Milwaukee and Green Bay and Oshkosh, and, you know, they hear about a government facility, a town hall that has no running water, just like you said, huh, really? But it's true.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's not out of the ordinary. And so trust me, these townships and the county, let's be honest, we know the financial struggles of the county. I mean, they're going to get an additional close to $800,000 increase, and I sure hope they use that, you know, prudently. It has to be, like Howard said, it has to be used for fire, EMS, dispatch. It can be used for infrastructure, roads, bridges, and I know they'll spend that money wisely.
A caller asked this question. Of course, we have a U.S. highway that runs right by us here, but mm-hmm. are any plans for Highway 14 4-lane and, you know, maybe some reworking of that or working in the future?
I think there is, but it's not going to be anytime soon from what I have gathered. I met with Rockwell a few weeks ago, and they asked too about it and stuff, and they're very concerned about the impact on their access into their plant there and stuff. So, but it isn't like it's an imminent, you know, going to happen here in the next couple of years. So, unfortunately, I mean, this road, I drive this often, and it needs attention. It needs a lot of attention. So one of the things that we did do in the budget was there's a connecting highways allocation for communities that have major highways going through them. And so we had a significant, I think, a 25% increase in the amount of the funding for that. And the City of Richland Center is one of the communities that's going to benefit from that. So, you know, you're looking at the Dodgevilles and Mostyns and Lancaster and, again, any Platteville, any of those communities that have got major highways going through them. And so that increase will be, I think that starts next year as well. So, again, but that's more for maintenance. That's just, you know, for maintaining it, not redoing it as we need out here.
Sounds good. We'll have more on the morning show coming up here with Howard Markline and Tony Kurtz on our morning show Monday from WRCO. State Senator Howard Markline is here today in the morning show with us, and Representative Tony Kurtz, as we talk about things affecting our area and the state of Wisconsin. I recently read a publication, I don't know if they, maybe some scare tactics or whatever, but talking about the Brewers in Milwaukee and losing the Brewers to another town. Have you heard anything lately?
Oh, we've heard a lot about
yeah?
that.
I'm sure you have.
You know, this is another discussion, and obviously Senator Markline, this has been going on really since January too, during the budget, and so I'll just tell you my position. This is me talking. A lot of people don't realize that when a team like the Cincinnati Reds or the Chicago Cubs, they come and play in Milwaukee, we actually get a portion of that player's salary as income. All right, so we don't have the stadium, we don't have the Brewers, guess what? We lose those salaries from other players. And that number, if you look at player salaries over the years, that number actually has increased drastically. I mean, if you look mm-hmm. at some of these player salaries. So the other thing is that stadium, a lot of people don't realize it. There's a stadium district. Well, when you really peel back the onion, the state owns the stadium. So the question is, what do you do with an empty stadium? The stadium also generates sales tax. You know, when everybody comes in, watches a game or a concert, that generates sales tax. You lose the stadium, you lose that also. So some of the thinking is, you know, you would use that sales tax that's confined to the stadium. You use those player salaries that we are collecting, and then you would use that as the state's commitment to try to keep the Brewers in the state. I would like to keep the Brewers. I think they add to our state, and if we can come up with some type of a formula where basically those salaries and the sales tax at the state that the stadium generates used to invest in the stadium, I think that's something that I would be willing to support.
So. Are there scare tactics though from owners, Howard? Just you know hold it over to the state that, hey, we're going to move them if you don't do something, and that kind of thing.
Well, we saw the same thing with the Milwaukee Bucks, you know, a few years ago. You know, and of course, I mean, they're smart people. They're negotiating, so you know, if you don't love me, I'm going to leave. You know, kind of thing. So, but I would like to just to follow up on what Tony said, and I think my decision on the Brewers, whenever that happens, is going to be based pretty much on the calculus that I used for the Bucks. Okay. The Bucks, same thing. We're going to, you know, if you don't build a new stadium, we're out of here, okay? And so we ended up, the commitment from the state of Wisconsin, and again, same deal. We own that stadium, you know. That, you know, the old arena was owned by the Bucks or by the state taxpayers. So the deal with the Bucks is that we were going to commit $4 million for 20 years, okay? Now, the state of Wisconsin receives income taxes on the Bucks salaries. Like one half of the season is played in Milwaukee, the other half's on the road. So half the Bucks salaries are taxed here, and then if LeVon James plays here, you know, and so there's a settlement sheet that we get from the NBA. Right now, we are collecting in state income taxes $14 million a year. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Just from the Bucks.
On the Bucks.
That's right.
On the Milwaukee Bucks. Okay? We're up, you know, and I just looked at this. It's been a long time since I've been to a Bucks game. You know, I don't know. I don't follow them that close. And you know, I'm not emotionally invested at all. For me, it was just strictly a financial calculation. And we made money from day one with the Bucks stadium. And right now we're making $10 million a year, and every year we make more money because that $4 million stays fixed and the salaries go up and the state of Wisconsin makes more money. So, and I just had a conversation with somebody last night about this, and they were leading into the Brewers deal. And I don't know what the Brewers deal is going to look like, but, you know, it's got to be financially worthwhile for the state of Wisconsin. And there's got to be skin in the game, you know. And the other thing that I think, or I'm hoping that happens, is the lease agreement between the Brewers and the stadium district is pretty one-sided, I would call, you know, in terms of concerts, who gets the parking revenue from concerts, and that all goes to the Brewers, even though, I mean, that. So I'm hoping that we can use this opportunity, if this happens, to have them renegotiate that lease agreement, make it what I fairer to the taxpayers of the state. But I'm not weighing in. I've told the Brewer management, you know, whatever. I give them a hard time once in a while. I said, are you still playing in Milwaukee? And anyway, but you know, it's got to make sense. It's got to make financial sense. It's got to be a good deal for the state taxpayers. Otherwise, I'm a no.
That's interesting. And I hadn't thought about the players, you know, that are coming in here being taxed. But it's the same thing for a concert. If Alan Jackson comes in or Luke Combs, they have to pay state income tax in Wisconsin, don't they?
Yep. Another thing, a week ago today, I was up in Green Bay for the kickoff of the 2025 draft, okay? And in the budget, we committed $2 million, not to the Green Bay Packers for the 2025 draft. We committed $2 million to the Green Bay Visitor and Convention Bureau. They're the ones that are organizing the event and need to raise the money. Now, again, the impact to the state of Wisconsin of the draft next year, this is going to be in April of 2025, is $94 million economic impact to the state of Wisconsin. I can tell you the Wisconsin Dells Visitor and Convention Bureau is really interested in it because there's going to be about 250,000 people coming into the state. There's going to be people staying probably in Wisconsin Dells traveling to Green Bay. So the they estimate that 70 million people will be watching that on TV. It's just a huge impact to the state of Wisconsin. So again, that $2 million that we committed to the, not to the Packers, they didn't go to the Packers, that is going to return multiple times to the state of Wisconsin in terms of just sales tax alone is going to be huge.
If you have a wedding or you're looking at getting a room at that time, you better kind of book it now,
book
right?
Now. Yeah. But to Howard's point, that just brings more attention on our beautiful state. And mm-hmm. my opinion, you know, if the state does well, obviously our, you know, Richland County, the beautiful Driftless, is also going to do well. I digress for a moment, but on that, back to the shared revenue. Mm-hmm. Remember, we were talking about how stagnant it was for years. The other big thing about the shared revenue package now, those new supplemental aid numbers are tied, and the old shared revenue number are tied to sales tax growth. So what that means is, you know, if, let's say a community was getting $100,000, sales tax goes up 3%. You're going to get your next shared revenue payment the following year is going to go up 3%. That has never happened before. So to Howard's point, what I'm stressing is the better our state does, the better our communities are going to do, because the sales tax growth, basically this is, I don't want to say necessarily it's an inflation hedge, but it is, that there will be some type of cost of living in that new shared revenue number. So state does well, our communities are going to do well.
You know, and if you're the town chairman for the town of Rockbridge or on the village board in Cazenovia, you ought to be just happy as heck that the NFL draft is going to be here in 2025.
That's right.
Right?
Sure.
Because
sure.
I'm like,
more money.
It's more money. More money coming into the state. That means more money for Boaz and Cazenovia and all of our communities here in Richland County.
Maybe they'll have to stay at some bed and breakfast in Richland County for the draft.
You know, yeah, you bring up absolutely a good point. I think the opportunity is for us in Southwest Wisconsin. How can we tap into that? Because there's 250,000 people coming into the state. And, you know, some are going to come in for 2 days and get out of here, or 2 or 3 days. But, you know, how can we capitalize on that and get some of those people to venture out here and stuff? So, I mean, there's an opportunity there that once we get people in from Arizona and Georgia and all over this country to, you know, maybe spend an extra weekend in Southwest Wisconsin.
But to your point, they might come in, but you're going to have the others that are going to stay for a week.
Right.
You know, I'm going to go to Wisconsin. I might explore it, come down to the Driftless. Right. So I think we have a great opportunity.
Indeed. We'll have a final word coming up here on the morning show in just a moment. On our final portion of the morning show, a few closing comments here from Howard and Tony. In the news this morning, Howard, I saw that Wisconsin Republicans proposing a bill that would do away with work permit requirements for 14 and 15-year-olds in the state. Anything you can update us on that?
I haven't looked at it.
Okay.
That came out, I think, late Friday afternoon. I don't even know who the bill authors are, and I've been at fairs and all that all weekend, so I have not had a chance to look at it.
Tony, have you heard anything?
Nope. That's something I'll have to take a look at it also.
Certainly, it's something to try. You know, we need more in the workforce, that's for sure.
Well, I know anywhere we go, just yesterday, it's workforce, workforce, workforce. So I'm sure, like I said, I'm sure the author's intent is just try to get more people into the workforce.
Fall session right around the corner here, right?
Yeah. We've got some floor dates, I think, tentatively on the calendar here in September. So I'm sure in the Senate we'll be taking up a number of confirmations and as well as legislation. There's been, you know, a number of committee meetings that have been held throughout the summer. So a lot of those bills have gone through the process and we'll be ready for scheduling on the floor in September.
You've been doing some work behind the scenes on mental health and some of those topics as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, so mental health is a big issue. And, you know, one of the things that is a big issue in Southwest Wisconsin is if we've got somebody in mental health crisis, they're in crisis, okay, in Richland Center, what happens? They call law enforcement, they call the police department, sheriff's department. That person is taken into custody, so to speak, taken to the hospital for a medical evaluation to figure out what's wrong with that person. And then if they are, you know, are in still in crisis, that person is transported to Winnebago Mental Health Institution in Oshkosh. Okay? Usually it takes two officers or deputies. It's a long trip. It's an expensive trip. It's not good for that person in crisis. They're now sitting in the back seat of a squad car for a long trip, which isn't helping their mental health condition. So we are working on, with the sheriff's departments, with the county's association, the hospitals, working on, it's called the Crisis Now model. We're working closely with the Department of Health Services, and we think we're getting very close. We're working on drafts of legislation that DHS says we're going to need, and it's my hope that we can get that to the floor sometime here over the next several months.
Tony?
No, I give Howard a lot of credit for that. That's something that has been an issue for years. And you have to think about it. Like, you take Richland County, and you just take two deputies off patrol, have to transport somebody up to Oshkosh, which is probably from here, what, close to 4 hours one way, if not, and then so round trip. So it and to Howard's point, just the mental state of that individual, you know, they don't necessarily need to go to Winnebago. Is there other alternatives? And that's something that we've been trying to research, and Howard and I have had numerous meetings with different organizations, hospitals, to try to figure out some type of model. And so I give him a lot of credit working with the administration and DHS to come up with some type of solution. That's been an issue for years, unfortunately.
We've been hearing a little bit more about a new hospital here in Richland Center, too. I know they're working pretty hard behind the scenes on that.
Yeah. And, you know, I was in Darlington. They're getting a new hospital.
Are they?
Yeah, so I was there a couple months ago, I guess it was, for the groundbreaking down there. But, yeah, that's an exciting opportunity. And, you know, I served for 10 years on a community hospital board, and was a chairman of that board for 4 years. And so, you know, facilities are important. It just, it is. It's important for the patients, obviously, but it's also very important as hospitals are recruiting physicians and nurses and stuff. So, it'll be, if that hopefully comes to fruition here. I know they're waiting on, I think they're still waiting on the word from USDA in terms of the funding there, and so that would be a incredible achievement here in the community if that can happen.
You've had that in your area. Mauston has a nice facility too.
Well, Mauston has actually remodeled. You have Hillsboro, mm-hmm. which obviously has a new hospital, but you know, I was here was it about a month ago, where they had a public meeting there at the high school. I thought the hospital and the contractors actually did a very good job. There's some great questions from the audience. I know some people are saying, why do we need a new hospital? You know, the nuts and bolts of it is facilities get to a point where they're too old to fix, if that makes sense. I know a lot of people, especially if they're very frugal, you know, let's just fix what we have. There is a point where it costs so much money to upgrade that, where it's actually better to build new. And that's where the hospital's at now here. And, you know, being a critical access hospital, you know, Howard and I have a lot of critical access hospitals. If you think about it, we need that here in this community. We got to have it sustainable. So I'm so glad they're going to build this new hospital. It is a funding issue. Obviously, we talked about inflation. You know, the cost of a hospital 4 years ago is a heck of a lot different than what it is now because of material costs and labor costs. So I know they're working hard, and we're doing everything we possibly can, but I am excited. And once again, being a critical access hospital, You got to figure how far we are from La Crosse or from Madison. You know, those minutes matter to save somebody's life, and that's so why it's so important to have a hospital here in Richland Center, have a hospital in Hillsboro, you know, Darlington. That's why it's so important to have these critical access hospitals, because truly minutes do matter and save lives. So I'm excited for the community. I give them a lot of credit.
The national spotlight shines on Milwaukee with the Republican debate. First one, you guys going to pay attention to that and watch that?
I don't know. I've got, I think, three meetings scheduled on Wednesday night. Two towns meetings and a Grant County Economic Development Committee meeting on Wednesday night, so probably not.
Have to set the VCR.
Yeah.
I'm sure there'll be some fireworks, but yeah, I've got some meetings too, so I probably won't be there.
Watch it after the fact, maybe. Yeah, maybe. So, all right. Well, gentlemen, thanks a lot for coming by this morning.
Thank you, Phil. Thanks, once again, we got some heat. I know you guys are talking all about it. Just, you know, watch one another, watch elderly and pets and things like that with the excessive heat in the next couple days.
Yeah, so. Word to the wise. Yeah, we'll see you again soon.
Thanks, Phil.
State Senator Howard Mark Klein of the 17th Senate District and Representative Tony Kurtz, Representative of the 50th Assembly District, on our morning show today.